Enough monkey business. You're listening to America's Most Titanic Podcast, the Pod People. I'm Dr. Robot Tease, and I'm here for the Chaos Emeralds.
I'm Ben Sheets, and I have a crazy story for y'all. So the other night I was at the bar, and this couple comes up, and it's Godzilla and King Kong, and they tell me they really like my vibe.
Damn.
And
me and my big lizard saw you from across the bar.
Yeah.
And we like your vibe.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did fuck up.
Okay. Cool. Cleveland?
What was your name? Did we get your name and all of that?
Or it's Ben Chief.
It's okay. Ben.
Yeah.
What's your name?
Who are you, Cleveland?
Hi, I'm Cleveland Mosier, and we're here to talk about a movie.
Is that your name?
I'm Cleveland Mosier, and we're here to talk about a movie in full.
Ah!
Yeah. Okay. It's my true name. I learned it when I went and took a vacation to Hollow Earth.
Did you know that the Hollow Earth is even more hollow
than the Earth?
Than the Hollow Earth?
Yeah.
It's got layers of hollowness.
It's like the Earth is an onion.
Damn. That's deep.
It's funny that you bring that up.
Shrek?
I'll get there. It's funny that you bring that up, because we just got back from seeing Godzilla X Kong, the what's the subtitle of this movie?
The Shrek
Frontier.
The New Frontier. The New Empire. The New Empire.
I was close, actually.
You were close. You were pretty close. We just got back from seeing it. This is the latest in the legendary MonsterVerse series once again.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
They're trying to do it. They've been trying to get this thing off the ground for like 2 decades at this point.
I mean,
point.
This is like the 5th movie in the franchise. Yeah, I'd say they've got it off the ground.
I don't feel like it's like a cinematic universe like they hope it is.
The monkey's paw curls.
literally. But, the monkey's curling paws in this movie.
So, you know, this is the just like the last one, Godzilla versus Kong. This one is also directed by Adam Wingard and written by him and Simon Barrett and two others. And that's what I wanted to bring it back around to. I think this is a great place to start because this script was awful.
Yeah.
It was just atrocious.
Ooh, too much.
And Simon Barrett is a writer that I typically respect. So I was kind of wondering, how does this happen? Well, there were two other people in the writer's room as well. Two gentlemen, one by the name of Terry Rossio, who did write Shrek, the first one.
Oh, nice.
which is, come back around to that. Yeah, he's got kind of an interesting filmography, because he wrote the 1992 Aladdin, the Disney one. Yep. He did the screen story for the first Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
I think we talked about that on the predictions episode.
I think you're right, yeah. He wrote Shrek, he wrote Deja Vu, the Tony Scott movie with Denzel Washington. He's written a number of things, and, you know, that little stretch, Aladdin, Pirates of the Caribbean, Shrek, Deja Vu, some good movies there, right?
Yeah.
And then we've also got Jeremy Slater, the fourth man in the writer's room. And you look at his filmography, and you've got Fantastic Four, 2015.
Fantastic.
The Josh Trank one. You've got Moon Knight. You've got The Umbrella Academy. You've got Death Note, the Adam Wingard Death Note.
Oh no!
Yeah, you've got the Lazarus Effect, and it goes on from there. And so I think when you combine this dude and the dude who wrote Shrek, and also Simon Barrett and Adam Wingard, then you get Godzilla X Kong, the new umpire, or whatever.
Well, the new umpire.
Yeah,
they threw him out of the game.
Three strikes, they're out. I'm over these
movies.
Well,
it's funny, you know, you talk about the three writers, because it feels like they crammed three full movie scripts into this
movie. Well, it's technically four, because Wingard has a writing credit as well. God!
If I could summarize it all, it's pretty simple, honestly. It's just that there's just a lot of showing and telling that could have just been showing. And I said this coming out of the movie theater, and I stand by it And that is that this movie, if you muted the dialogue in this film, would make more sense. If they just bothered showing all of the crazy shit and not explaining it, it would be so much better. I mean, Tisa, you were saying that there's like 6 different glowing crystals in this movie that do different
things. At least. I could not keep track of the number of glowing crystals.
It was really, especially by the end of the movie, it was insufferable, like just how often characters were just saying, like, just expositing constantly. Like, just, oh, we have to reverse the polarity of the crystals by putting it in the astral goo that does the... And they're like, constant. Like, there's no time for a character plot because all of the character dialogue is eaten up by exposition. On top of that, too, awful quips.
Oh, like, my God. Really? Oh, my God.
Really bad quips.
The Marvel soy dialogue in this movie was, like, levels that I've
never seen. Yeah, I was really hoping we were past that, but we're still here. I'm imagining, like, OG Godzilla with, like, the reporters on the ground and all the serious stuff happening, and, like, Godzilla comes out of the water for the first time, and it plays the bop, 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 bop music, and then, like, a reporter just looks at the camera and goes, well, that just happened!
That basically happens, like, multiple 20 times in this movie.
You know, it's so upsetting, too, in this movie, because you have so many great actors and actresses.
Yes.
And you don't have one single, like, human performance.
No. It's that is overall, like, this movie's biggest sin is, like, how many people are involved majorly in the production that I have high regard for in their craft. Yeah. You know, like, we've already talked about Wingard and Barrett, but cast-wise, you've got Rebecca Hall, who is usually great. I mean, she's returning from the last one. I've never thought much of any of these characters, to be fair, but she is just exposition machine in this movie.
Yeah.
With just like
shit.
Without a fucking single hint of like human emotion.
And like, it doesn't help too that the dialogue scenes in particular weirdly edited.
Yes.
You catch that too?
Yeah, a lot of it is ADR. I think that a lot of it is added in post. Because I think they know, and I think test audiences knew, that this doesn't make any sense. This movie doesn't make any sense. And I think
which is cool. Just let it. Let it not make sense. That's what I say.
Make it fun and cool enough that I don't care about it not making sense. Like, that's the problem with it is, like, you know, anybody who's been listening to this podcast for a long time, I'm sure I'm sounding like a broken record at this point. I do not like these legendary monster movies for the most part. I like Kong Skull Island, and I enjoyed a lot of things about Godzilla versus Kong once we got into the dumb monster fight stuff in the third act. And it's like, if you're keeping me entertained with, like, cool, fun spectacle, I don't really give a shit if your movie doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But this movie is just so bogged down in just, like, nonsense plot and, like, pseudoscience that it's just, like, it's boring!
Yeah, and honestly,
it's fucking,
like,
boring!
This, coming out of the screening, makes me kind of reappraise Godzilla versus Kong in a lot of ways. Because, you know, think about the context of the release of that. Like, it was right near the beginning of the pandemic. We watched it, you know, sitting at home.
That's right, I'd forgotten
that. On streaming,
that.
On a small screen where we can heckle it and have a good time. And all, you know, crack jokes at the movie and not pay full attention. Now, we're back in the theaters. We're all silent, obviously. We're not heckling in the theater.
Well, typically a Godzilla movie is something that I would want to see in the theater, right? You want the great audio, the big screen, the spectacle.
Big screen.
Dolby. We saw it in Dolby. But yeah, like, I felt like this movie was holding me hostage.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, like, I feel like my enjoyment of the last one, maybe it was less the movie
and
more
the
experience of hanging out with friends, heckling the movie.
That does always make it more fun, yeah.
Because, like, this movie I found to be pretty boring, honestly. Like, outside of a few choice moments where it does feel like slamming together, you know, some action figures and, you know, very wrestling coded with Godzilla and Kong just straight up doing wrestling moves.
Yeah, Kong does superplex Godzilla over one of the pyramids of Giza at one point.
Yeah, which amazing.
Which is pretty fucking sick. Well, that is another thing. Is like I think, you know, it's been a few years. I've not seen Godzilla versus Kong since we covered it on the pod. But, like, I remember, like, really not enjoying, like, two-thirds of that movie, and then once they get to Hong Kong at the end, and it just becomes, like you were saying, like, smashing action figures together, that part of the movie totally won me over. And I was kind of going into this expecting the same thing. I'm like, okay, the first couple of acts are gonna drag, but at least we'll probably get some, like, good, exciting monster action in the third act. And we really don't. I mean, we do, but it's less distilled, and it's constantly interspersed with more dumb plot nonsense that doesn't make any sense, introducing new MacGuffins and stuff.
This is a pretty long sequence with all four of them fighting at the end.
Well, right.
That last scene in Rio, that scene is, like, maybe 10 minutes. And, like, the Hong Kong shit with Godzilla and Kong and then Mechagodzilla in the last movie is, like, the last 30 minutes of the film.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I feel like each of these movies' final act is plagued by their inspirations. Like, I think back all the time to King of the Monsters and, like, how monochromatic, mm-hmm. like, that whole final act was, with the very dark shot scenes and very blue, and like this one feels like it's almost inspired by like Transformers, where it's ugly, and you know it is saturated, but it's not fun to watch or look at. It's so busy.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I did find myself like thinking a number of times, like, this is too colorful, especially like some of the later stuff in the Hollow Earth. Like, it, I don't know, it feels like fucking like My Little Pony, like rainbow,
it's
vomit
garish.
Like,
it's ugly, it's not good to look at,
it's not, and it feels like it lacks some kind of like stylistic cohesion. Like, I'm not saying that I want the monochrome stuff of King of the Monsters back, because I don't.
There's so much room between the two,
but I do. Well, I feel like Godzilla versus Kong was that. I thought that the fight in Hong Kong at the end, like, has a lot of fun and interesting use of color, which, frankly, I think they kind of just ripped off from Pacific Rim. But, like, that stuff, like, I enjoyed, but, like, I don't know. Yeah, this I thought was ugly. Like, the CG is, like, technically very high quality, but it's, like, so pervasive that it just ends up looking like a video game cutscene most of the movie.
I honestly didn't think the CG looked that great.
There was one shot in particular that really stood out to me, and that's when they get to Rio at the end. There's a beach sequence, there's a tidal wave, it gets frozen over, and then the big red ape Scar fucker, whatever his name is,
Lanky Kong,
thank you.
That's what we're calling him.
It's good, I like that. Yeah, Lanky Kong, he comes up over the wave and he hits the sand. And right before he hits the sand, we see the beachfront, and it looks like go back and look at that one shot. It, like, the beach net, like, there's a volleyball net and stuff. It's only there for a split second, but it looks like an unreal, like, rendered cut scene. Like, it's like you can see the polygons and stuff. Like, it's really,
even
like,
even more so than,
I was
like,
really, I was gonna surprise with that one shot.
Background elements like that, I think even Kong looks kind of bad in this movie. Like, I think about, like, one of the early scenes where, like, he, like, rips apart, like, a bug creature thing, and, like, green goo covers him, like he's being fucking slimed in Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
And it looks awful.
I liked it.
It doesn't look...
It doesn't look real, but it looks fun. Like, I honestly, one of my favorite things about this movie was all of Kong's doofy expressions. They don't look like an actual real giant ape. They look like a goofy cartoon, but I couldn't help smiling. Like, whenever Kong was doing silly shit.
Kong is the most interesting character in this film.
Way more interesting than the humans.
Way more.
He probably, well, but I kind of see where Ben's coming from, where, like, I do think that, like, the technical quality of the CG is good, but there is something that I struggle to put my finger on that, like, does give it that sort of bad quality that you're talking about.
I think what it is it feels dissonant with the tone and the vibe of the movie, because while it does look cartoonish and over the top, and a lot of things about the movie as a whole are like garish and like oversaturated and maximalist, like it's still going for that kind of Marvel like type of like quasi epic realism, it doesn't mesh with the type of movie it's going for. And I almost wish it would just go full cartoon with it. Like, that, I feel like that would be more bearable than, like, this Marvelification that we're getting here.
Yeah. What is that? The Marvelification thing is real in this one particular. Like, I think these movies have always had hints of that, but this one really does. Like, I was so many times when we were sitting in this, I was thinking, like, this is just like a couple of steps removed from some Marvel cape shit.
I think just putting a cape on Kong is all you need to do, if I'm being frank.
They put an Infinity Gauntlet him in this one.
I'll say, that was in the trailer, and we talked about it, and I remember one of y'all or someone I was talking to said that, like, oh, they're just doing a Marvel. And I went to this movie specifically trying to give it its fair due, and, maybe see if that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And, it is. It sure is. It's undeniable, and it's not. And to me, it's the hack plots. It's just how much things are dumbed down. It's the super hyper bright colors. The whole thing. It's just jangling keys, man. It's 2 hours of jangling keys. And the most frustrating thing about it is, like, I used to work in QA, and people are stupid. It is known. It is true. General audiences are stupid. This movie's made for general audiences. I respect that. However, there's ways you can organically cater to stupid people. And I gotta tell you, like, having, Blingus McGee tell us that the Gorbo crystals are inverting the power supply doesn't help the stupid.
A lot of my stupid people
hate being talked at. Like,
a lot of my favorite movies are movies that know how to speak to the stupid part of my brain.
Yes, we're not all like trying to be up on our fucking podcaster high horse right here, being like, "Oh, Kong versus Zilla needed to."
Look at our episode from last week on Immaculate.
Yeah.
Like, Immaculate, awesome. And we were comparing that to Malignant. Like, those types of movies are, like, very specially catered to, like, tickle the stupid part of my brain. That gets me, like, ooh, yeah, clap, clapping, like, like, some sort of deficient, but, like, I don't know. This kind of slop, it feels insulting. Like, it really does. It does feel like it is stupid, but it has no love and no care put into it. It is like, jangling keys is the perfect metaphor for it. Like, I was seeing that so many times in this movie. It's just like, my eyes just started glazing over, and I just started seeing like a disembodied hand like jangling keys in front of my eyes. And like, when that happens, like, I do feel a little insulted, honestly. Like, I do feel like it insults my intelligence a little bit.
It's
like,
and it really is. It's just the dumb human people expositing constantly. And if they just shut up and had like, Or shut up about those things and just had a human story, it'd be fine. I know y'all aren't huge fans of like King of the Monsters, but like, I much prefer the plot of King of the Monsters. And King of the Monsters just still doesn't have a great plot, but it has one. This movie doesn't have.
I could not recount the plot of King of the Monsters for you.
It's like a father trying to reconnect with his daughter, and like, it's sweet enough. But
I just know it has Ken Watanabe in it, and I like him.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
That movie sucks ass.
It does. It does.
I think it's a cool monster fight. But no, man. Yeah, this was just Ben. I think you said it in the middle of the movie at one point, because like, you know, we were watching the movie, but it's so loud that you can just like turn to somebody and say something.
It's like, yeah, you said we weren't heckling in this, but honestly, like this is the most heckling that I've like vocally heckled a movie in the theater in a long time. I just couldn't resist.
Like after a while, but no, Ben, you said it like. Please, let's not get into the plot. But, like, they're a bit when they're inside Hollow Earth and Hollow Earth and Hollow Earth, and there's a...
I do want to talk about the plot a little bit, because I think it'll be funny.
Okay.
To try to break
it
down.
I'll leave it to you in a sec.
But yeah. we're not worried about spoilers. I don't fucking give
that.
A shit.
No.
I do not care.
No. How could you even...
Speak your truth, Ken.
The spoilers, it's a panoply of colors and sounds, and it sucks. But, like, it's overwhelming. But yeah, there's, like, a hidden barrier, and they touch it. And they have to, like... It's Mothra goo. Would have been great if a character had said that. That would have been fine. Like, but instead it's like, oh, it's a hyper whatever big
bio, bio... Bioelectrical is a word that they like to throw around
they
a lot.
They basically explain exactly what is happening in front of you.
As it's happening. And it's like, they're already, like, reaching out and touching it, and it's making, like, electrical pulses and stuff. And the girl walks up to it and pulls it open. And we can't even have that. Like, we can't even have the girl, like, pull it open and the characters being all like, oh, she knows. And they walk through. We've got to cut back to the one guy just be like, oh, should she be doing that? But like, there's so much of that in this fucking movie.
Oh, my
and
God,
it's
dude.
It never, like...
And again, from an actor I really love.
He's great.
Brian Tyree Henry is back. I mean, he was in the last one, too. Like, he's back. And his character...
is the worst.
Never shuts up.
Great character. Actor. Horribly.
Oh.
What is he supposed to be? Like
the exact opposite of Paperboy.
Okay, it's so weird.
I hate to say this, boys, but he's supposed to be us.
I get that.
He's literally a podcaster.
He literally says like Alex Jones shit. Like he calls his fans truthers.
Yeah, because he helped save the world in the last movie, but nobody believes him. They think he's just doing it for clout.
You know what's so stupid, too, is in this movie they try and play it up like he saved the world again by, what, saying things that were happening in front of him? Yeah, fucking great job.
He actually
sure saved the world.
Now that you bring it up, what did he actually
do in this movie? Other than look at things and say what was happening.
Dan Stevens did some things.
Dan Stevens gave
Kong his Infinity Gauntlet. Like, Dan Stevens actually does things.
It's kind of unfair to the rest of the cast, like, how much special attention Dan Stevens' characters gets. If there is a funny clip in this movie, it's from Dan Stevens.
He's the only human character in this movie that I didn't hate.
Yeah.
I did not love him either, but his natural charisma made me not hate him.
Yeah.
He's grating, but they give him the most to do in the movie. And
yeah.
That's why we latch on to
He has the most...
Not a completely useless character.
He has
like
the most, like narrative impact on the film.
He also
like,
fits in the movie the best because he's an adventurer guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's a vet. He understands the animals. He's kind of like the Chris Pratt in the Jurassic World movies, you know?
Sure.
Whatever. Like,
but
he's got
more
that,
charming.
But way more charming, frankly. Like, way better than that. He does the adventurer stuff, and he takes risks and gambles.
We're introduced to him by him fixing Kong's broken tooth,
which is
right?
Great.
And he gives him a big, like, a big cool metal tooth instead.
Mm-hmm. And so, I thought that was sick.
But it's like, yeah, you're right. He's the only one who actually does anything because Rebecca Hall, her character is only there for exposition. She exposits everything. Brian Tyree Henry is the comic relief, quippy one. He doesn't actually do anything in the movie. And then you've got the little deaf girl.
The mystical silent Asian.
The mystical silent Asian.
Archetype.
Who, God, I hated her in the last movie, and I hated her in this movie. She is just an atrocious actor.
She's so bad.
She only knows how to make one face, and it's, my tummy hurts. That's the only expression she knows how to do, and the whole fucking movie is her making tummy hurts face.
I mean,
just like
credit. Like, I guess
I mean, she's a child. Okay, whatever.
Well, no, also
like,
just like
I'm not gonna dunk on her.
Seen any of her other work, but like all the other actors here suck. Like too, and they're great actors. Or sorry, their characters suck. The actors are great. So, like, maybe it's the same for her. Yeah. I don't know.
And she's just there because she can. She's psychic and she can communicate with Kong. And who cares? Like, who cares?
It's amazing, man. Like there are.
She's
there
the chosen
so
one.
Many movies. So many movies with psychic characters where they don't have to explain it.
She's the only one who can awaken Mothra.
And this
for
movie
some reason.
Like tells us like 3 or 4 times that these characters are psychic. Like they have to like tell you. Like, and also who cares why? It was unnecessary. Like
I'm gonna posit something and I wanna get y'all's thoughts on it and I'm curious if it's just me who feels this way. But I actually think, and again, I've not seen Godzilla vs. Kong since we covered on the podcast. I don't think this movie is in actuality that much worse than Godzilla vs. Kong. I just think that in the intervening years, we've had a small handful of very particular movies that have exponentially raised the bar for this type of movie that make this look so much worse in comparison.
I think it's both, honestly. I think this is actually worse than Godzilla vs. Kong.
Like, see, I think if I were to go back and rewatch Godzilla vs. Kong, I think I would be almost as bored as this movie.
I have watched it earlier. I forget. I kind of.
I might be wrong,
but it actually has pacing.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's why I don't know if it's just me, but I think of stuff like the quality.
Like Mechagodzilla is like pretty clearly set up.
I mean, I think you're right in that like the bar with in a post. Godzilla minus one world, like,
yeah,
it's much higher than it was, during the pandemic where everyone was just starved for anything they could get their grubby little hands on.
But not only Godzilla minus one, and frankly, I'm surprised we've gotten this far into the podcast before mentioning it at all. I think I'm going to put in a little CinemaSins ding every time we say Godzilla minus one for this episode. not only Godzilla minus one, but shit like Avatar 2 as well.
Yeah.
Like, especially when we're talking about, like, the quality of the CG. It's like, I'll give you Godzilla vs. Kong's pacing, maybe, but I do not think that, like, the CG in this movie is actually any worse than Godzilla vs. Kong's. I don't think it's any worse than King of the Monsters or those other movies.
I would agree, but I think part of the thing for me is the only time I saw Godzilla vs. Kong was on the small screen.
That
I never saw it in Dolby.
And
I feel like if I saw it in Dolby, it would have been so much fucking
that
worse.
Definitely has something to do with it, but also, like, we had Way of Water remind us of what CG in film can actually
be true visionary. And again, that's the thing. You guys were talking about like going to the lowest common denominator and making a movie for dumb people. I think Avatar: Way of Water is a great example of like going towards a wide audience, but not dumbing it down.
And not insulting your audience either.
Exactly. You don't have to write and explain every single thing for people. If the dumbest people don't completely understand everything, but emotionally feel everything,
yes,
that's fine.
God,
that's
yes,
totally
100%.
Fine. There's like, no emotional core in this movie.
Yes, yes, exactly. Way of Water is far from highbrow, but it has an exceptionally strong emotional core that makes you forget. Also, just like Jim Cameron is like one of the best living filmmakers, which helps a lot. But it's astonishing how that movie makes you forget that you're watching a movie about CGI blue cat people on a planet called Pandora. That you are able to actually connect with these blue cat people characters and forget how fucking just inherently imbecilic like the concept is.
Well, that kind of goes back to I think a point that Cleve was trying to emphasize earlier. We kind of got sidetracked, but during the movie, there's a moment where, like, the Mothra goo is opened.
Yeah.
And, like,
oh, yeah,
go
thank
through.
You. I was going to... Because you had a point about that.
And, yeah, right after, a character literally explains everything that just happened and what's about to happen. I just turned to Cleve and says, mm-hmm. Who needs Wonder anyways?
Yeah, right! Oh my god!
That, to me, that sums it all up. I think you're so right, Ben. Like, the dialogue in this movie just removes any sense of wonder from
yeah.
it. Like, it removes us the chance to, like, figure out what's happening, and it just lays it out before us, before we even really need it to be. And it's stupid. Like, yeah, just let the weird goo be weird goo and figure out what it is. Like they can explain it later, or, not at all, right? Like, Mothra, we see Mothra repair it.
Yeah, exactly. You could even have
they do show it. They don't need to show it and tell it. Like,
you could even have like one of the science-y characters like touch it and be like, oh, this is like, it's almost like a moth's cocoon or like a silk or something, like an insect silk, like
yeah,
a silk.
Which would have foreshadowed Mothra.
And then you're like,
cool,
and then you're like, oh, whoa. But also, like, at that point, Mothra has beyond been foreshadowed, because before they even find the goo curtain, they find the temple that just has a big carving of Mothra on it, and the little psychic deaf girl has to sign to Rebecca Hall for Rebecca Hall to repeat out loud, this is a temple. This is a place of worship. This is where the Kiwi tribe would come and worship Mothra, the protector of the tribe. And it's like, ah! Like, let me see, show me the carving of Mothra. That tells me everything I need to know. And then, oh, okay, there's this weird, like, glowing, kind of, like, silken thing. It's like, okay, we're getting, yes, Mothra. We're getting close to Mothra. But the whole time they're like, Mothra. It's Mothra. Mothra is the...
Guys, Mothra's
guys,
coming.
Guys, Mothra is coming. And did you know that Mothra is... a good guy who's friends with Godzilla and who is actually, like, wants to protect people?
I like to think that they were focus testing this movie at one point, and they were focus testing with a cut that, like, pleasantly sets up Mothra for you to be, like, you know, like, there's just a little bit and you're pleasantly surprised, and someone, like, and the
because, like,
Mothra,
we've seen Mothra. Yeah. Mothra is in, like, King of the Monsters.
Yeah, like, yeah, like,
Mothra's been introduced
before, yeah, but, like,
it's not like,
so,
like, this
they,
is a new...
They set it up in a way to have you excited for it, and then Mothra appears, and it scared someone so much that they died. And by principle, they had to change the remake of the movie. Could you imagine, like, yeah, like, just being so stupid that, like, you're just terrified
by this
revelation that a big bug is in the movie? Like it blows my fucking mind. Like why you think you need to emphasize the shit so much? Like, it's not fun. Dumb. It's insufferable, and it makes it harder to understand what's going on when everyone's like talking about dumb bullshit all of the time. Just let me just look at it.
I will say the way that Mothra in particular is treated in this movie did kind of make me laugh a little bit, because there's something about, like, Mothra that feels like a kind of 80s
unicorn friend kind of shit.
Yes, kind of PSA kind of deal, like G.I. Yeah. Joe or like Captain Planet.
Thanks for cleaning up the oil spill, Mothra.
Thanks, Mothra. Yeah. Dude, there's a moment like in
well,
the...
Yeah, because oh, I don't know. This franchise is built on, like, no budget productions in Japan, where they just wore rubber suits with concrete in them.
Yeah.
They didn't have the technology to build, like, proper suits at the time. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing. It was just a big rubber moth. Like, they
yeah.
were just dicking
yeah.
around.
But, like, well,
now we have to take this shit seriously.
The way it's presented, like, in this movie, it appears almost angelically.
Yes.
Like, it's so fucking blown out when we first see it.
Yeah, well, they're like, okay, this is Mothra.
Well, you didn't come on site.
Mothra is the guardian of the tribe and the people or whatever, but it's like, in that, like...
Moth tribe is cool. I wish they had, like, moth affectations or something. Like, you know, they could have had, like, cool moth-looking hats and shit.
No, it's literally just the same tribe from Skull Island, except in this movie they live in Hollow Earth.
Yep.
Because the Skull Island ones were wiped out.
See,
but
Yeah, they removed the K from Kiwi.
Yeah, but Mothra is so, like, there's one moment in particular, like, during that the big fight in Hollow Earth before they make their way up to Rio on top, where they do the dumb pseudoscience thing where through the power of glowing crystals they, like, temporarily disable the gravity in Hollow Earth or whatever, so, like, all the monsters are, like, flying around and bopping each other and stuff, but also, like, the people are flying around in their little ship, right? And the ship, like, gets hit by a floating rock or something and is, like, spinning out of control, like it's about to crash, and Mothra swoops down and grabs the ship before it hits the ground, Mothra. And then goes and, like, places it gently down on the ground, and then flies away. It's like, thanks, Mothra!
I think that's fun, stupid.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Okay, it's good. Like, yeah, those. Right. That's the little thing. It's like, that kind of shit made me laugh because it's so dumb. And I think that's a good segue into something I was saying in the car on our way home, is that, like, there are slivers, there are glimmers of brilliance in this movie.
Sure.
At times. Yeah. And it's, I mean, as you'd expect, it's all during the fight scenes. But there were, like, what I think this movie does well at times is it makes it turns the monster fights into, like, slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
Into, like,
mm-hmm.
Three Stooges bits. Like, there's a part earlier where, like, Kong first meets, like, baby Kong and gets attacked by some of the other evil apes, and Kong just picks up baby Kong by one of its legs and just is, like, smashing the other monkeys with this smaller monkey,
which to me,
and that made me laugh. So that was so I thought that was so funny
because like you look at, like, clips from, like, those like the old, like, kaiju films, and there's shit like that all over the place, man. Like they're hurling each other at each other and, like, silly shit. One of my favorites is, like, with Gamera. Like, there's a bit where Gamera, like, there's a long pole of some kind, and Gamera grabs it.
Is Gamera the big turtle one?
Yeah. And Gamera, like, spins around on it, and, like, you can clearly tell it's, like, just a pencil.
Yeah.
Like, because they didn't have any budget, you know? Yeah, like, good. Yeah, go back to the dumb shit. Like,
that stuff is funny. Like, we mentioned earlier, when
the baby around,
when
funny.
Kong, like, superplexes Godzilla through the pyramids.
Yeah,
like,
incredible.
That awesome. Kind of stuff is funny. I in general, like, I like sort of the setup with Kong at the very beginning, where he's like, oh, he's sad because he doesn't have any friends. I just like how a lot of the creatures in the movie, in the Hollow Earth, are not really creatures so much as they feel like guys. They're just like guys.
Oh,
like
nice.
When he's sitting up there with, like, the monsters that he's killed, and this big fat iguana comes up and, like, runs off with one of his kills. He's, like, playing tug of war with it. But then he, like, ooh, he hears a roar and it sounds like, oh, maybe there's another ape.
It's a buddy.
And it's a buddy,
maybe,
finally.
Maybe it's Godzilla.
He's not.
That's right, because he's looking.
Yeah, because he's looking for more apes. And he's like, oh, maybe he's not alone. And he runs, he's jumping through the Hollow Earth. And then he gets to, like, a waterfall. And he sees just, like, this big, dumb, fat frog that, like, inflates. And when it, like, opens its mouth, it makes a roar that sounds like his. It's like, that kind of stuff, that goofy kind of shit, like, that's the stuff that this movie does well. It's just so few and far between.
I think you're getting at, like, the core of, like, why Godzilla vs. Kong worked the first time around more for me than this one did. Is, like, the spirit of incredulity and, like, stupid shit being thrown at you and being, like, incredulous at how stupid it can get.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get shit like Mechagodzilla being introduced in this underground vault. You have Hollow Earth for the first time being, you know,
the Hollow Earth is so stupid.
And, you know what? But they're confident about it in that movie. Like, they're just like, it's Hollow Earth, go with it. You know? Like, they explain it a little bit, but, like, they don't get caught up.
But again,
in all
the
crazy
there's
shit.
The stupid incredulity of it. Like, you can't believe they're going that stupid with it.
Yeah, if you want to get movie, to and from Hollow Earth, you have to jump in the monkey toilet.
Yeah. With this movie, you know, their baseline is that. So they're assuming you accept all of that as normal and not, like...
And it's like, I guess you should.
Yeah, it feels weak to me to, like, feel the need to, you know, just, like...
But because of that, like, the only thing we get novelty out of because of that is the funny bits.
Yeah.
You know, the slapstick, the toad.
But it's like, that's also kind of the reason why this feels so much like a late-era Marvel movie to me, too, is that, like, sure, it doesn't... This series doesn't have that same longevity, but, like, again, we're five movies deep at this point, right? So all of this prior shit has been set up that you just have to, like, accept.
Which is, and I think... why people love Endgame, you know? Is
because I guess it's all been,
I know we don't, but, like, it's all been set up in the other movies, so they can just have a movie with all these characters.
Well, that's what, I mean, that is, like, I think the appeal of those Marvel movies for the Marvel fans is, like, this is the culmination of what, like, all of these movies have been leading up to. And it's like, this movie is not that.
No,
I mean, it's a team-up movie, okay, sure. But, I mean, it does just have, like, all of this shit that you just have to accept. And I feel like just, like, the way that characters talk, especially the human characters, like, talk about stuff, well, really exposit stuff, is just, like, I don't know, like, there's something that feels so fucking, like, tone deaf about it all. Like, when fucking, okay, all right, this is a good chance to get into something. Like, I know last week we announced that Woke was dead. Sydney Sweeney suffocated Woke with her giant boobies.
Yeah.
She suffocated Woke to death, and we were finally free from Woke. Sorry, folks, Woke is back. Godzilla in this movie, they made him trans. They transed Godzilla. And the way that they transed Godzilla is that they made him swim to the Arctic and
fight a creature.
Fight the Titan Tiamat.
Which is probably the laziest bit of exposition.
Oh my god,
that's
dude.
That's the worst one. I think that's the biggest offender.
They were building that up like it was gonna be this big, there's this big fucking dragon that has where its lair is absorbs a lot of solar radiation.
It was powered by like this big solar flare. Like here's the thing, also. Okay, it's a solar flare powered space dragon Titan that lives, like, underneath the Antarctic. Why isn't that the boss of the movie?
Godzilla literally kills it off screen. Godzilla literally, quite literally, but they're like, their followers,
but
like,
I know, like, a bit, like, but like, Lanky Kong instead is gonna be like,
right,
the big boss.
Well, they're like,
the
yeah, Godzilla's,
a
Godzilla's
central antagonist.
Like, yeah, Godzilla is swimming.
Like, they had Tiamat, and they just, like, fucking wasted, like,
Godzilla,
like,
is swimming to Tiamat's
cool
lair.
Look neat.
Godzilla's swimming to Tiamat's lair because if he takes out Tiamat, then he'll be able to absorb all of its radiation, and it will, and Godzilla will become supercharged.
So I like,
and so that's what Godzilla does. But what it does is it turns his spines pink.
Does
and
he becomes trans.
Yeah, and he becomes trans.
I'm like, still mad that they didn't show that pop off between the two of them.
Bro, we literally see like the glowing space dragon like burst out of this iceberg and like swim at Godzilla, and then we cut to the surface of the ocean and see like Godzilla's laser breath fire out into the sky, and then just the pieces of this mighty laser dragon that we've been set up to believe is some like crazy.
But yeah, I mean, like, are we even set up to believe it's
no,
that cool? Because like
the movie's just
and it's by some guy we never see again in a submarine.
Yeah, yes, it's
like who was that? Who cares?
He has to say it because Rebecca Hall isn't there to say it for him because she's in Hollow Earth.
Yeah, but terrible. But here's another thing. Because we've compared a little bit, but to me the clearest reason why like Godzilla like why Versus is a better film is just that it's just Godzilla Kong and Mechagodzilla at the end, like it's clean, You know, like
it's cleaner.
Yeah, yeah, fair.
it's cleaner. Much, I won't say that simpler. Movie. I don't say that this, movie this doesn't movie... have its fair share of dumb pseudoscience bullshit.
No, but that's fine.
But it's clean. It's cleaner.
Right, right. Well, it's you can have some. You know, as a treat, like yeah, go crazy.
Because we haven't even stuff. Talked. We haven't fine. Even talked about Lanky Kong and his ice we'll turtle we'll yet.
But yeah. like you can have some of that stuff. Yeah, it's just about how it's presented and how it's used.
Sure.
But again, I'm here for dumb, and that's fun dumb to me. Like, yeah, get the weird conspiracy shit out. That's fine. Just you just don't need to blab about it constantly. It sucks. So yeah, let's talk about Lanky Kong.
Yeah, honestly, I think Lanky Kong might be the biggest problem with this movie. Because this movie lacks a just compelling a nothing antagonist. Villain. Yeah.
Well, it's the usual like superhero origin story thing that the like superhero origin movies do, where we have to introduce our character, so we need to have a perfect foil to them. We need to have the mirror image of them.
But yeah. We had most a whole movie before this. I feel insane.
Exactly. No, you're right. That's what I was setting up for. Is that like this is? They should have done this like in Skull Island. They should have done this like three movies back to have like the perfect foil for Kong be an evil Kong. Like the mirror honestly, image, like Shadow Self stuff, like is you know like frankly, I'm real fucking over it. Like every origin movie does yeah. this shit. Everything does it, and it's like it's not even.
And this
an origin
isn't an
movie.
Origin anymore. We're five movies in.
Exactly.
And you know what? And you know what? And you know what? I'll say too.
I would do it too. This is an origin. It's not even an origin movie. We're five movies in. There we go. We've all had it now.
It's
I would have fun too.
you know what I'll say? I think they blew their load with King Ghidorah in King of the Monsters too early. I think King Ghidorah would have been the ideal antagonist for this movie.
You know what kills me too? Mecha Ghidorah exists.
Yeah, there you go. Like, I feel like they you couldn't really do mechas back to back.
I'm telling you, the next movie is gonna be Mecha Ghidorah.
Because
I'm saying it now.
Because Godzilla and Kong do team up. They do team up to. They do team up to kill Mecha Godzilla. So, but like, I feel like yeah, there needs to be like a really good like
Mecha Godzilla was Ghidorah, wasn't it? I don't remember. It was built out of the skull of one of the other ones. It was one of Ghidorah's skulls.
Yeah, they did do something. Yeah, something like that. I don't remember. But yeah, like Lanky Kong is just not a villain that feels like it needs a Godzilla Kong team up. And I feel like the way that they try to shoehorn that in is that Lanky Kong has a big pet ice turtle that he controls with a glowing crystal. Surprise! Another glowing crystal. And so they need Godzilla so Godzilla can fight the ice turtle, and so Kong
my eyes are glazing over.
Can fight Lanky Kong.
Did Lanky Kong ever feel like a threat to anyone besides Kong?
No.
And Kong got his gauntlet, like, right after.
Yeah. Lanky Kong has a cool weapon. He's got, like, a... like.
I do like the weapon.
The spine of, like, a snake or something with... that he uses, like, a whip, and it's got the glowing... It's got the glowing crystal on the end of it.
Here's the thing, and, like, I think he uses it in a cool way. I like Lanky Kong's design.
I do too.
I like his long, limber limbs. He looks spooky. I like his kind of glazed
and
over
that,
eyes.
In that introductory scene where he shows up, like he's got like some personality. He's got yeah. like some swagger. Like the way he comes out of the cave and like kind of fucking strikes a pose. Like it feels like an anime villain, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yeah, which is good.
But then once we really get into like the nitty gritty, like
yeah, that's my false part.
Then it just becomes like another CG. Like brick house to smash into things. Like yeah. it just like I don't know. He loses any sense of personality once the actual like action starts.
You know, you get the evilness of his character when he appears in Rio and starts just destroying yeah. the city. And like I wish we would have gotten more of that. You know, like
well, you know what we really needed. right, I think I can.
I do I
can
like when this. I do like when he kicks the one ape him. Into the lava when oh, he's first introduced. Again,
his introduction is good. Like that, yeah. That sequence is pretty solid.
It would be better if it wasn't just like 100% CG. Like that's the whole thing that was driving me crazy. Is it like
there's nothing grounding it?
I kind of like that introduction of Lanky Kong and him squaring off against our Kong, you know, and like I kind of like that, but it's just like the whole thing is CG. It's just a video game cutscene. Like it's just 100% CG. There is not a single practical thing in that entire scene, and that was driving me crazy. And I feel like it really prevented it from like
grabbing
clicking.
You. Yeah,
yeah, really but, grabbing me because like, I like things about it. But
so here's what would have been
just like, what are we doing
today,
here?
Right? He has a sick bone weapon, right? Like he's using.
He's
the
got
whip
a bone
with a
whip
on it.
Yeah,
he's got a bone whip. That's cool. All right, you know why it's cool? Bones are cool, right?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. He caught him lounging. He's just hanging out, and he always keeps his bone on him, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, same, right? But, like, he's hanging out, he's doing his thing, Kong shows up, they have a tumble, and he fucks up Kong. Kong goes and levels up.
Yeah, right? He gets his Infinity Gauntlet.
That's and Godzilla is just Goku, basically, this whole movie. You know, he's going around charging his power level.
He's literally like, just charging up his power level to go Super Saiyan.
Kind of fun, but anyway. Fun, but too much of a B-plot. Godzilla's my favorite, so I would like more. But anyway, that's a stupid critique. But anyway, my point is, the villain needed to level up, too, to keep things interesting. By the end, bone armor.
Should see, that would have been cool. But his quote-unquote level up is his ice turtle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he already had that. That's what I made Kong have to leave.
Is he doesn't feel like a threat to the surface world enough.
The ice turtle is scary,
because he
too.
Only because he only shows up to the surface world in the last, like, fucking 10 minutes
yeah.
of the movie.
I think a scene near the beginning where he shows up on surface Earth and destroys a city would have made him feel like an actual threat to push the rest of the movie forward.
You know what? I think normally you would be right, but I'm actually going to push back against that in this movie's case. Not in defense of the movie, but rather a further critique of the film, if you'll allow me. Is that I think the human toll of these movies is addressed in only such abstract terms that Lanky Kong showing up to destroy a city would be meaningless, because Lanky Kong shows up in Rio and then Godzilla and Kong show up and collectively all of them just annihilate the entire city.
Millions
of
people dead.
Shit, our introduction to Godzilla in this movie
destroyed.
Is him stomping through Rome and fighting a big Japanese snow crab kaiju, which
that's
is kind of cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
But like he didn't like it, that fight ends with him like throwing it into like the Vatican, basically. I will say I do like that he sleeps in the Coliseum like
yeah,
it's a cat's
bed.
That's one of the one of the few things. But
one
it's like
gems.
I'll okay now to once again bring it back to Godzilla Minus One. Ding. That is a movie that not only has, like, such compelling human characters, but also, like, Godzilla feels like a force of nature. Think of the scene in, and I can't, it's, frankly, it's criminal that we're devoting an entire episode to this fucking movie and not Godzilla Minus One.
I guess we didn't cover it. I thought it was,
I think we should at some point.
Yeah,
I said it when we saw it.
Year, that's.
Yeah, it didn't fit in our schedule. But like think of the scene where Godzilla comes ashore in that movie and uses his nuclear breath for the first time in that city. And think of the way that that's treated and the human toll and how just that one blast of his nuclear breath, it is in the film, it is the stand-in for the atomic bomb. It is absolutely. It is literally and, that, and you fuck and you fucking feel it.
Yeah.
Like the like the it's way that my
to, like every single the way one that of the like
my stomach
up.
The way that my stomach fucking dropped in that movie when he fires that nuclear breath and you just get that massive explosion, you just know like the sheer fucking toll of human life that is lost. Like it feels like a fucking punch in the gut. And in this movie alone, the monsters fucking annihilate Rome, Cairo, and Rio de Janeiro, and it feels like nothing. It just like it is toy blocks to be knocked over. Yeah. And I know it's unfair to compare this to Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, that's kind of what they're going for.
They're going for different tones. You're not supposed to care. I know. But, like, man, it's just, like, it's hard to not draw the comparison. Think about it when you're watching this movie. It just, like, there's no emotional weight to it whatsoever.
Well, that's the thing. I think, like, one of the earliest scenes in Minus One is a great example, where, like, you have the pilot who lands on the remote island.
Yeah!
In the middle of the night, you know, Godzilla attacks. And not only do you get the immediate on-Earth threat of Godzilla, you get the consequences.
Right.
And in this movie, we get neither. We, you know, in terms of, like, Lanky Kong, our actual villain of the movie.
I mean, they say in an expository scene that thousands of years ago or whatever, Lanky Kong wanted to conquer the surface, and so Godzilla threw him in Hollow Earth prison or whatever. And he's been trying to find a way to get into that monkey toilet ever since, so he can get back up.
I feel like I'm
hearing
this for the first time, because there's just so much.
Yeah, it's just all nonsense. It's just like all
having it exposited to you is not the same as showing you why.
Yeah,
he's a threat with actual grounded elements and consequences.
And it's like we get humans. And it's like we get one shot when he lands on the beach and he looks down at all the little scurrying ants around him, and you get this one kind of like look of glee on his face as he bellows at all the people running. But then just like immediately, there's like
See, I thought that was great, too.
That but one was, little moment, yeah, I agree.
I felt like it was too little too late, though.
100%, yeah. So, like, 100%. And just, like, why am I supposed to care about his ice turtle? Is it? It's literally just. It's literally just because a big orangutan isn't scary enough, so they have to put him on top of a Godzilla that shoots ice instead of nuclear breath.
So, like, they set up the ice turtle as a big reveal in the trailers. I remember, like,
yeah,
it's like, oh, there's something else beneath
the glow. You see the glowing eyes in the dark. Else. Yeah,
and that's cool. Like, and that had me kind of like, oh yeah, what is this dark Godzilla-esque horror beneath Hollow Earth? What is this horrible creature going to be? It's like Sparkle Princess Turtle, Ice Turtle.
Yeah.
Like it's all shiny and white and has like rainbow crystals on it. And it looks like cute. And it's not an edgy, like, laser beast. Like Godzilla is, like, Godzilla's way scarier than this thing.
Also, I feel like, and this is, I'll acknowledge, this is a nitpick.
Sure.
But I feel like they do a really bad job with the scale of this beast in particular.
Scale, because lizard, yeah, I like
it. Yeah, sure. I feel like they do a really bad job with the scale of this beast, because I feel like when it's introduced, it feels, like, smaller than Godzilla. Like,
because it's quadrupedal.
Right, yeah, it's quadrupedal. It comes out and it feels like it's smaller. And you see, like, that when Lanky Kong and his army leave their magma prison or whatever, he's like riding on the back of it or whatever, and it doesn't look like that much bigger than him, you know. And it, like, it feels smaller, but then once it and Godzilla are fighting in Rio, it's bigger than Godzilla.
I don't know. These movies are wild for
scale. And again, like that's a nitpick in something like this, but like I do feel like when you're dealing with kaiju, like maintaining a consistent sense of scale is important, I think. And I think that's I think that's easy to do when you have a guy in a rubber suit, because the scale is consistent because it's practical. But when you're using CG, there's a lot more room for fluctuation. You know what I mean? And it's another thing I think Godzilla Minus One did really well. Consistent sense of scale. The lizard starts small on the island, but he's still really scary. But then he gets a bomb dropped on him by the USA, and he becomes very big.
Yeah. And even on the island, he's big enough.
Oh, yeah, he's big. Oh, yeah, I mean, he's still huge.
Very tall, yeah.
Yeah, but
it's just not 140 feet tall.
Exactly, like, it's the difference between 40 feet tall and fucking 200 feet tall, you know? It's like, that, and that's like, we see, and that's what's another thing that's so great about that movie, is like how intimidating and scary he is in that first scene when he's only 40 feet tall, right? And then he shows up later 200 feet tall and can fire atomic bombs out of his mouth, and then it's like, well, then what the fuck are we gonna do here?
Also, yeah, like,
I care about why
Minus One does really well is setting up scale again, like, yeah. We see a lot of our sense of scale of Godzilla in Minus One is in relationship to people,
right?
You know, I feel like because we see so many of these fights just completely separated from people, we don't have that scale reference.
Yeah. Sure. It's difficult. Well, yeah, and that's why you only get the actual intended sense of scale in the fights when they're fighting in cities, mm-hmm. where you actually have, you know, a banana to hold up next to them to see how big they really are, yeah. You know? and, like, yeah, it's the stuff in the Hollow Earth is, like, you cannot fucking tell. Like, you cannot fucking tell. Like, you can't tell how fucking big Baby Kong is supposed to be. And if we're gonna shit on any CG in the movie, I think Baby Kong looks awful all the time in this movie. Just dog shit.
Yeah. I had a thought.
Please. That's what we're doing. Podcast. We're sharing thoughts.
Thank you. Yeah, you're right. this isn't the first movie to have trans Godzilla. Shin Godzilla already did that with the purple lasers and all that.
Oh, he does have purple lasers in that. Yeah, that's true.
And they're cooler. They're way scarier.
God, Shin Godzilla.
That way, though.
Yeah, Shin Godzilla is like so much more effective than anything in this movie.
So much of, and
like,
it's like,
this is like apples, because like Shin Godzilla has that incredible, like, I actually rewatched that like two nights ago, that was because I rewatched Nausicaa, so like I had to pull up, you know, the short with Giant God Warrior Destroys Tokyo, and then I had to, you know, watch some clips.
You're on a Hideaki, kick, yeah.
That focused like tight laser beam that's followed by the huge eruption, like, explosion is...
It's so cool, man.
It's the coolest thing ever. Like, it's so cool. Like, there is nothing cooler than that.
Talk about another movie where, like, you feel the human toll of the destruction, you know? Like, goddamn.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, they have, like, he cuts through all those buildings, but also in that same hit, he hits, like, the helicopter that has the Prime Minister on it, you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
There's untold human death and also relatable toll death in one shot. Like, it's so fucking cool, man. Like,
this movie feels so flat at the end after they try. They're like, fucking Brian Tyree Henry is like, we saved the world again. That's like, woo-hoo! But like, three of the most historic cities in the world are again just like decimated, annihilated.
Just kaiju holocaust.
Millions of people dead, and like the movie just doesn't. Who cares?
It's wild too, because like the previous movies, not necessarily. Verses, but like the movies before that, King of the Monsters, Godzilla, they take some steps to show that like Hawaii is being evacuated. People are trying to get out of there,
right?
They're trying to evacuate the cities and get the people out in time. Like the first Godzilla movie in this run, is all about that. It's all about trying to get the people out. Like, that's right. The whole point of the movie. And this is in the same world as this.
Yeah, four movies later.
Like,
that's the thing. There's always
so funny to me because, like, this movie starts with, like, emphasizing that. Like, this series starts with, like, emphasizing, like, the human toll and how important it is to be the boots on the ground and to get the people out.
Well,
and,
I mean,
and like, and now, like, it's like.
Shut up. Siri, shut up. Siri, be quiet. Siri. Hey, Siri, be quiet.
Hey, quit your yapping, bitch.
Yeah. All right. Leave that in.
I might. We'll see.
We got interrupted by Siri. I think that was clear, though.
You said her name again. Now she's listening. Siri, be quiet. Shut up. Siri.
Siri, Google
Siri?
Gay porn.
No. Siri, no. No. Siri, be quiet. Siri. Goodbye, Siri.
Okay, you're Googling.
Goodbye. No. Cleveland, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
For me, Siri. All right. Anyway.
What were you saying?
The death toll. The human death toll.
No, like, yeah.
When they...
the cost of human life.
What were we talking about? Oh, you know, the cost of human life and the untold thousands of deaths. Yeah, no, in this film, like, every time the kaiju show up in a city, the city's fully populated and hasn't had the chance to evacuate. They're making jokes about it, too. Like, the podcaster, we catch him, like, podcasting at the beginning, and his podcast is sponsored by, like, the only insurance company that will cover, like, kaiju destruction.
Yeah.
What the fuck? That's so cynical.
You know,
it's kind of funny, like, but oh man.
See that is a more interesting movie though. That is a more interesting movie. Like, I would love to see a movie set in the same universe from like a really granular human perspective about what it's like to live in this world where there are just dozens of kaiju that could just one.
It's Pacific Rim.
It's Pacific Rim. It's Pacific Rim.
It's interesting because, like, that makes me think about the podcasting character as, like, a broad strokes character in this movie. Is like,
oh, yeah, let's talk.
Why
about
is he like a crank when, like, it's dude, common knowledge that there's
I know, bro, bro, I know.
He
yeah.
is. He for yes. First off, that sorry. No, you're right. Like he. Why is that a conspiracy theory? And he was a conspiracy theory guy in the previous movie, but this is where he would have an arc. We check in on him again. Then he's changed. He's working for Monarch. He's doing
the trolls on his blog don't believe that he was in Hong Kong when Godzilla and Kong fought. So now he has to go to the Hollow Earth and film it to get legitimacy.
The same arc twice. And but on top of that, too, he's like three characters wrapped up into one. Like, mechanically.
Three of the most annoying characters ever. Yeah.
He's the crank. He's the crank no one believes. He's also, at times, the scientist. Like, he's the one who understands what's going on, which you can do for, like, the crank note, you know, like, the blind prophet, you know?
But
like,
he doesn't, that's the thing, he doesn't really.
No, he just says what
he doesn't really. Like, Rebecca Hall shows him, like, a seismograph with, like, these three peaks, and then also shows him her daughter's drawing of also three peaks, and he's like, yeah, they're the same, and she's like, oh my god, thank you!
Yeah, this is gonna sound crazy.
She's like, I thought I was crazy, but they do look the same, right? He's like, yeah, now you'll let me come to Hollow Earth with you, right? She's like, sure. And then he does nothing for the rest of the movie.
Other than wisecrack
and be like, oh, actually, when you pour the liquid metal goo into this other goo, it creates a chemical reaction that acts as like an engine combustion that will move the two glowing crystals together, so when they cock dock and they touch tips, then the gravity will be disabled, so the monsters can jump around each other for a while, but then when they come apart, then all the gravity will separate and everything will fall back down.
See,
again,
you know what's crazy about that too is we are already in Hollow Earth. Things are crazy. That's all you need to say. Like they could just be. Sorry, I feel like we're repeating. I'm repeating myself. I've said this before already. But like, yeah, like we can just see the weird crystals glow, and then just float around and be like, yeah, okay, the crystals doing Hollow Earth shit, And then, like, to have a whole scene about it is insane to me. But
because they have to use it mechanically. That's the only reason. Because they have to use it mechanically. Like, if it was just a thing, then whatever. We already have to believe that Hollow Earth is like, oh, the inverted gravity. There's the floor is on the ceiling and also the ground. Yeah. But because they have to use it mechanically for some reason, then they have to explain the quote-unquote science behind it. So they have to come up with, well, we put this goo with this goo, it makes glowing crystal do this, and then thing happen, and then Lanky Kong jumps in the monkey toilet and goes to Rhea.
The thing is, they really don't, but they feel like they do.
That's what I'm saying. It's insecure.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't mean... None of it actually means anything. So, none of it actually means anything, but they do describe it.
So to go back to the guy, right? Like, he's the guy who has to explain some of that stuff, but sometimes it's the other characters. But he's also... Even though he's the guy who knows the shit, he's also the guy who doesn't know any of the shit.
Yeah.
Like, his character is the one who's constantly fish out of water and confused.
Oh my god, did you see that?
What's happening?
Did you see that guy just got ate by a tree? I would hate to be eaten by a tree. I can't believe that I brought my ass all the way to Hollow Earth, and I just saw a man get eaten by a tree. Can you imagine if you got ate by a tree? I would sure hate if a tree ate me.
I kind of wish he would have gotten eaten by a tree, like, after that.
That is the crazy thing about this movie, is it is full of actors that I love playing characters that I was constantly wishing would die.
Honestly, I wish they would have killed one of the primary characters.
Well, see, knowing our luck, they would have killed Dan Stevens, the only semi-interesting one. Yeah. But don't worry, folks, they didn't kill any of the primary characters. None of our actual protagonists were ever in any danger whatsoever. And they really weren't. Was there a single scene in this movie other than when Mothra scoops their little plane out of the air? Was there a single scene in this movie where the human characters, our human protagonists, were actually in present physical danger?
No, there's a few times where
that's a problem, too.
It is.
Oh, that's a huge problem,
it's huge.
Too.
Because there isn't a human story, they're just there to look at
how many times. How many times in Godzilla Minus One are we afraid that one of our protagonists could die in any instant?
The entire film.
I think of that. Think of the fucking scene where they're out there fucking exploding the mines in their little boat, and Godzilla shows up for the first time, and
they're just swimming
behind their tiny, dinky little boat, and you're like, oh my fucking god, holy fucking shit, you know? It's like you don't feel a single moment in this movie for any of the characters. Like,
well, you know,
and the one time they kind of do it, it's a thanks Mothra moment.
Thanks, Mothra.
You know,
sorry to touch on that moment specifically for like the fifth time, but
so funny.
The when their ship is like starting to crash because the electricity fucked up their engine. There's a almost funny moment there where Dan Stevens says like something along the lines of like. And I'm not super right, like it's pretty close to the quote. He's like, "Oh, the polarity of the prisms, the reversing of it is affected our battery thingy, or I don't know, something like that." And that's funny. He kind of like riffs off of it, being like, "Oh, I don't know, something."
It's like, who knows what's going on?
Yeah, who knows what's going on? Who cares? But also, like, I'm sorry, you really can't have this cake and eat it too. The entire movie, you have been doing this. You can't suddenly, like, tell us it isn't important.
Yeah, you
like,
can't...
You're just telling us you have been wasting
You can't have half a moment of self-awareness.
Yeah, like, and if the whole movie had been that, or, like, there'd be a lot more of it, or there'd been one character that they told to shut up, that'd be great, you know, like... But instead, like, it's the entire movie, and then right at the very end, they just get a little jab in where, like, at their own movie. Like, where it's like, yeah, movie... Thanks for that bit of self-awareness. It has been annoying. Like, like, thanks, Dan Stevens. You're right. The battery thingy, no one cares. You said the line. That's all we needed. Like, you could have said a quip instead. Because the whole time, these characters could have been... Like, I hate quips, but I'll take a quip over just full
I'll take a quip if it's actually fucking funny.
Funny. Right, yeah, not just an observation.
Which it isn't ever in this movie. Man, we need to wrap up and rate.
Yeah, no, it's good. We've been saying the same thing.
But I think my last little piece is, you know, people are talking a lot these days about director jail. And I think that there are two types of director jail, which is not often discussed. The one that most people think about is people like David Robert Mitchell, who makes a movie like Under the Silver Lake that is like vastly misunderstood and maligned, and nobody wants to give him money to make anything.
Or like Robert Kelly, who made Southland Tales,
and right,
has never been heard of.
Exactly, exactly. That's like the primary form of director jail, but I think there is a secondary form that people too often overlook, and that's actually getting sucked into the industry machine and making only like overbloated, overpriced, like dog shit CG slop fest spectacle Marvel movie style shit. I think that does happen to people, and that's the kind of director jail that Adam Wingard is in right now, and I want you, and Simon Barrett by association, and I want you to free my boys.
See, I feel like that's too forgiving on Adam Wingard.
Damn, they're in a golden Simon prison, Barrett. And they're sleeping in, exactly, you know, prison beds of money.
I feel like it's no almost sympathy. Too forgiving, because, yeah, like, they are getting paid for that.
I know they, like, are.
It's,
I know,
a prison of their own choice.
Sure, sure. Like, you're, dude, absolutely
send me to that prison.
You're absolutely not wrong about that. But, like, I do think it is still kind of a prison. It's like once you get sucked into that and you start making that kind of money, I think it lowers your standards as a filmmaker. You start caring about it less. You're just making a paycheck, and the quality of your work gradually descends, and before you know it, that's the only kind of fucking movie you make. And whether it is a prison of your own making or not, it is still a prison, it's still director jail, and I want my boys freed. I want more The Guest. I want more You're Next. I want more of these movies. I'm done with these Godzilla Kong movies. I'm done with them.
I gotta say also, like, credit, I made the same point during the Blair Witch episode.
I mean, that's another great example. That movie sucks.
That, like, you look at the behind the scenes and they look tired.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, yeah, honestly,
that,
like,
was, well, that was a minute ago.
Adam Wingard's been in this route since Blair Witch.
Yeah,
I know.
Ever since post-guest, like,
I know,
it has been nothing but this.
I know, like, and fucking we talked about Simon Barrett's directorial debut, Seance, a couple years ago, and that was not very good either. I will bring one last thing around, because Seance made me think of it, because I know we talked about in Seance had their overuse of that super wide angle lens that kind of like warps the edges. Yeah. This movie vastly overuses a tilt shift lens.
Yeah.
Did you notice that too?
Yeah.
Where it's like so much of the fucking movie is like the center of the shot is in focus, but it's got like this fucking like warped vignette around
it's so silly when all
it's a
it's
a tilt shift lens.
Fucking
yeah.
Visual effects CGI.
Anyways, I know. Like, it's like why? Like, don't get me wrong. Like, a tilt shift lens used effectively can be great, but they use it to such a comical degree in this movie. I'm like, why are you using this lens?
We're watching it in Dolby. We're like, it's a huge screen with this all this great surround sound, and you can only really see like a sphere in the center of the screen in focus.
Yeah.
What's the fucking point?
And again, like, stylistic choices, but it TV like set. That kind of thing, like, in this, it's overused for no good reason.
No, yeah,
I don't understand
it. Like, 2/3 of the screen on either side are fucking blurred.
Yeah.
Like, I can't see anything.
It's distracting.
Yeah, what's the point? And blurred and also warped.
I mean, you never need to see the things that are blurred and warped, but it does create an effect that is so prevalent that it's distracting.
And, you know, on top of that, too, like, so much of this movie was, like, 80s retro shit for no reason. Like, other than, like, it's the neon style, it's all hypercolor and stuff. And, like, To me, it's just like they're trying to, like, well, Baron Wingard check all of the Guardians of the Galaxy boxes about, like, really getting what made that first one, like,
yeah, interesting movie. I don't know. I will say, I think
they've always done that.
Baron Wingard have always been, like, heavily inspired by and influenced by 80s pastiche. Like, you see it a lot in The Guest. You see it a lot in stuff like Your Next. Like, it has been a consistent part of their style, and it doesn't necessarily bother me. It doesn't fit this movie.
No. See, here's the thing. The Guest is, like, entirely, the whole film is pastiche. It's inspired by these things. But Godzilla has nothing to do with that.
There's not...
And, like, Guardians of the Galaxy is also, like, very much inspired by it. It's part of the plot. Like, he's got the tape cassette that his mom gave him.
There's not much more to it in this movie other than... The oversaturated color palette and the synth score. Like, that's there's not much more to it than that, and that's why it kind of
stops being pastiche and it just becomes anachronism. You know?
Yeah. It didn't feel particularly 80s to me.
No.
I wish it felt more 80s. Like, even, you know?
I mean,
pick a lane.
I guess I'll be the first to rate.
Please do.
You know, like, I remember seeing on Twitter when this film was starting to be marketed, someone had jokingly recut the trailer with "The Boys Are Back in Town" over it.
Yes, I saw the same thing.
And I find that trailer recut to be far more entertaining than the movie itself. Like, that's what I wish this movie was.
If this movie really had a Boys Are Back in Town kind of vibe to it, I think I would have enjoyed it much more.
And a self-awareness.
Yeah.
You know, we, you know, between the three of us, have talked about Dune 2 being the driest movie of the year. And in a lot of respects, you know, it's very true. It's set on a desert planet. But in a lot of respects...
It's not emotionally dry.
This movie is the driest movie of the year because it has zero juice. It is a completely juiceless movie.
Fucking got him. Slap the rating on that bad boy.
This is
finish him.
This is a 1.5 out of 5.
Bro, yes.
Not good.
I will echo that exactly. When I left this movie, I was sitting on a 2, but after this episode, I have talked myself fucking down. Yes, this is a 1.5 out of 5.
I think Weta had some really cool designs, and designs are important to me. I like those. I liked looking at some elements of this movie. And those
yeah, but how many stars did you like looking at it? How many stars out of 5 did you like looking at it?
2.5.
Wow, 2.5. Look at you, big boy.
It's funny saying that's generous, but...
2.5, wow.
Oh, yeah. But
that's firmly in mid-territory, not even bad territory.
It's pushing it, but...
I mean, it's literally the midpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It is middle of the road.
It's perfectly middle of the road. It's mid.
I stem by it.
You stem by. Okay. Stem by All right. Okay. You stem. You stem by.
I think it's
I know.
A good idea. I
know you. I've known you for a long time. Like if we sit through the credits of a movie and you see the words "Weta Workshop," that immediately adds an extra 0.5 to your rating.
It does.
At least.
Well,
every...
no. I was also sitting around to see if it was because it had a lot of the same hallmarks as that. Because I have an eye for that.
They do so many movies these days. They're so big.
They're really bad movies. They did Elysium.
Yeah.
They did they've done most of Blomkamp's movies.
They did the
Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, dude. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying like seeing their name is not an indication of the quality of film. Because they are so big now that they do everything.
And I'm not saying it because of that. I'm saying it because
I know you're
liked
not.
The practical
effects. I know you're not.
Because I liked the practical effects. Because also, like, Elysium, the Andrew Garfield. Well, I've seen clips of the Andrew Garfield.
These movies all look fine. They all have good design
elements. Yeah.
Elements. Yes.
But
you can't blame the quality of the movie on the special effects workshop most of the time. Yeah. Anyway, Godzilla X Kong, the new whatever, gets an average of 1.8 out of 5. Who cares? Before we get to next week's episode, we do have prediction results.
Yes, we do.
From Immaculate last week, and I'm very excited to hear these. So yes. Why don't you take us into that?
So then. I'll start with box office. Cleve, you predicted 2 mil.
Okay.
Tease, you predicted 5 mil. I predicted 7 mil.
Hmm.
The final opening weekend box office was 5.3 mil.
Yo! Christ. I was very close.
Very close.
I was actually kind of hoping you would be right on that one, though.
Yeah,
and honestly, when I predicted that, I kind of thought that was a little bit high. But the response to Immaculate has been good. I've been very happy
and
to see it.
And they've been fucking killing it in the marketing.
The marketing, yeah. Yeah, they've just been slapping crazy conservative rightoid Twitter or quotes just like over their marketing material. Yeah. It's been great.
Yeah. So next, Rotten Tomatoes. Cleve, you predicted 70. Tease, you predicted 75. And I predicted 51. Turns out, Cleve, you were right on the money.
Oh, 70.
70.
No shit. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
God, I thought I might have that one too.
No.
Yeah, so...
Can't win them all, Tease.
I can't.
I gotta win some of them.
Collective rating, both of you two predicted 3, and I predicted 2.6. It was definitely above 3.
It was, yeah. It was like 3.7 or 8, yeah. I think. Yeah.
We did it.
We did it, good job. And kill count, Cleve, you said 6, Tease, you said 5, and I said 1. It was 6 or more, I'm pretty sure.
Was it? Girl at the beginning, one who jumps off the thing, her friend who gets dead. I think you're right. The Mother Superior gets her head bashed in, the Cardinal gets choked out, and then...
The final thing, that's 6.
Yeah, 6. And the baby, 7. Yeah, no, you're right. Holy shit.
Yeah,
so Cleve, you got that.
Wow. Oh,
yeah.
High kill count. Wow. How about it? How about it?
Nice.
And then who will rate this the highest? Cleve, you said I would. Tease, you said Cleve would.
Oh.
And I said you would.
So Ben got that one.
And I
so
got,
ben got that
one.
Right. I should have had faith in myself.
Yeah. Any additional comments? Cleve, you said none, but good.
I was right.
That was correct.
Well, in the loosest sense.
There was a nun in it, and it was good. It was not the nun, but good. There were nuns, and it was good.
TC said this will have a lesbian subplot.
I was so close.
Oh.
It didn't.
It did not.
It did not.
It did
but
not.
I was close.
I said
it
will be
did.
Mid, and I
was wrong.
I'm happy to be wrong.
Yeah,
on that
wrong
one.
On that one. Yeah.
So.
All right, great. Well, we'll have prediction results for Kong X Godzilla or whatever next week, so be sure to stay tuned. But speaking of next week, we're going right on into another new movie. I think we did not actually predict this one because we weren't originally going to watch it.
Correct.
But then a couple of very slick trailers changed our mind, and also its proximity to Immaculate and its subject matter. We're going to be covering The First Omen next week.
Yep. Oh, man.
I'm tempering my expectations, but whoever they've had cutting their trailers has given me some hope, so we'll see.
Some people on Twitter have been sharing this, like, cut trailer of First Omen that's cut like a 70s trailer.
That's an official trailer.
With voiceover and everything. And it's fantastic.
It's great. And it's an official trailer, yeah. Too. It's not a fan edit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, it's like the marketing doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the quality of the film itself. But like that and like the original trailer with the Fever Ray track on it, it's like,
I should probably try and watch The Omen before watching this movie.
It's primed me. I don't think you necessarily need to. But
yeah, I mean, this is literally
it's great.
A prequel. So, like,
yeah,
context is literally not important.
This is the first Omen.
I don't want to taint my viewing of the... You know, we'll see.
Anyway, well, we'll be talking about the first Omen next week. Cleve, why don't you do a quick sponsor for us?
Okay, all right. The shelf is glowing, and we are knowing that there's a sponsor that will be shelling. This is...
The Grave Ghoul!
Ooh!
This episode was brought to you by that slippery, drippery boy himself who's always caked up with the gravy. The Grave Ghoul.
In Greek mythology, Charon would row the spirits of the dead across the River Styx. But I now ask you, what if the River Styx was made of gravy?
And you were a ghoul.
And Charon, the ferryman, was the gravy ghoul to ferry you across the River of Gravy. Think about it!
Charon, my wayward son.
Charon, oh yeah.
There'll be gravy peace when you're done.
The only piece that God knows is gravy piece. Anyway, that'll bring us to the end of this week's episode. If you like the show, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening to this. You can also, of course, become a patron at patreon.com/podpeoplepod. Shout out to our honorary pod boys, Sam, Zach, Micah, and Mitchell. Y'all are the goats, as always. Follow us at letterboxd.com/podpeoplepod, where you'll find a list of all the films we've talked about on the show with our average ratings and links to those reviews. My recommendation this week, I'm going to recommend an album. It is the self-titled album of speed metal band I Am the Intimidator. It is a Dale Earnhardt NASCAR-themed speed metal band. What if Dale Earnhardt had a sword? It's actually really good. Check it out. I recommend it. It's a lot of fun. They got riffs. Check it out.
This week, I want to recommend the movie Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning. This is technically...
I saw you put that on Plex.
Universal Soldier 6. This was made 20 years after the first Universal Soldier movie. Imagine if you took, like, the schlock of a 90s action movie and put it in the Brundlefly machine with directors like Gaspar Noé and David Lynch and Michelle Haneke.
I'm in.
And you do an almost avant-garde take on an action movie. It is just an incredible movie. I can't recommend it enough. It was an instant 5-star for me. And honestly, it's so jarring and horror influence that I might pick it on the podcast.
Okay.
Big recommendation.
All right.
Cleve, what you got?
Out three things real fast. Tokyo Vice.
Yes.
Shogun. And Dune.
All things that we've shouted out in the last few weeks.
All things we've shouted out before, just to say, it's the year of the quirked up white boy, and I'm super here for it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Not the White Savior movie, the quirked up white boy. There's a big difference.
The soulful white boy in the foreign land. That's what we're here for, and
the soulful white boy in the foreign land fucking up big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the genre.
Decisions.
All three of those movies have that in bountiful amounts. So or series, I guess.
We're eating.
We're eating.
All right, folks. Until next time, thank you for listening. Make sure you check all of your glowing crystals that they're working or whatever.
Crystal shit.
Change had much to say, but man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. I told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. The boys are back in town, the boys are back in town. I said, the boys are back in town. We'll be right back.
what she'd got. Man, when I tell you she was cool, she was red hot.